This is Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Reverend Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church and partner at Dendros Group.
I'm Don Eubanks, associate at Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians.
And I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group and producer of Counter Stories.
Luz Maria Frias couldn't be with us today. She's not feeling well, so we wish her well. We're going to take this opportunity today, since Luz couldn't be with us, to do a grab bag episode. For those who've listened to Counter Stories in the past, every now and then, there's a whole lot of things happening at once, and we've got to touch on quite a few things. And so this is going to be one of those episodes where we're going to jump. And so come with us on this manic journey as we go through a whole lot of things, because we know, as folks of color, we're constantly dealing with many different things on many different levels all the time. All right, y'all ready to jump into it? So I'm just going to start slinging them out to you. So the first things first is, of course, we've come through the Derek Chauvin trial, and we've got trials happening across the country. Right now, we're gearing up for the trial of Kimberly Potter, who shot and killed Dante Wright during the week of the verdict in the Chauvin trial. And so I'm just curious, you know, how you've been tracking this and gearing up for yet another high-profile trial for an officer-involved killing of a Black man here in Minnesota. Go.
Well, it's been interesting. I've been, this trial isn't garnering the type of national or, you know, national kind of daily intense coverage that Floyd did. In fact, it's been very low key as far as I'm concerned. I think what stands out for me so far is the local media coverage and how it's kind of being portrayed. And so, you know, local media tries their best to provide kind of different perspectives. And, but it's, you know, they're trying their best to do this. Yeah, I've been trying to follow, like, if there's been any kind of specific rulings.
There have been two, right? So the judge allowed both of the charges, the manslaughter charges, to get added to the docket in September, which immediately increased folks. For those who want to see prosecution in this case, the adding of that first degree manslaughter charge in particular kind of ups the ante a little bit in that regard. So there have been some rulings in that case. One of the things that folks are really looking at is what's happening in other trials. At the same time as Kimberly Potter's going to be on trial, we've got Rittenhouse's verdict is coming anytime now with the jury, and his lawyers have tried to ask for another mistrial before the jury even finishes their deliberation. You've got the Ahmaud Arbery case. There's pastors across the country, Black pastors across the country, who are going to Brunswick, Georgia, to stand in solidarity because of the Black pastor comment by the defense attorney in the Arbery case, in the case against the men who shot Ahmaud Arbery. We've got all of these things that seem like they could have bearing on the other, and so they want to get the charges just right. So I think that's interesting.
That's what I've basically been like. The trial with Rittenhouse, there's just so much wrong going with these trials. I'm really nervous that it's gonna, you know, become a precedent of some sort that will affect the cases that are happening here. And not that I care about, you know, not that I don't care about what happens in those cases, but like these are, you know, local, close to home cases. And I feel like some of this stuff, I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in what's happening in the Rittenhouse case just because of who the judge is and the way he's been behaving this entire time. And I'm really afraid that will somehow affect the trials that will be happening here with the three officers in the George Floyd murder and in Kim Potter's case. So, and I think they're allowing it to be live streamed as well. Yep. Is that correct? And so that's like this whole new element. Like, I feel like I might be glued to my screen the whole time. And I don't want to put myself through that, you know?
Well, it's you know, take it to somebody who you know, with Georgia. Georgia had to take the brunt of it, but having to cover and watch every bit of the Chauvin trial for the Racial Reckoning Project, that, I mean, it takes a toll on you, especially in the proximity here. So one of the things that happens when these killings and these trials go on is you start looking at the proximity to folks in these cases. So I'm a former classmate of Philando Castile's. I'm a you know, I frequented La Conga, so you know, George Floyd got me in there a couple of times when I wasn't wearing the right dress, and he could have easily turned me away. And so I knew who to go to when I went there. Like, there are connections and community to this. One of my mentors in ministry was a teacher of Dante Wright's. And so some of us don't get have an opportunity to be removed in the ways that folks can, and it can take a toll. And so we've got a bunch of these cases coming, and I'm just curious, you know, about how y'all are going to take care of yourselves through this one.
Well, you know, I think you know, these other cases are they're not as intense as Floyd. I mean, Floyd was very intense. That one, I think we did talk about. That one, I had to pace myself. Okay, that, and
are you saying the Chauvin trial?
Yeah.
Or during the Floyd?
Yeah, the whole thing.
I mean, okay, you know, from beginning to end was so traumatic that one, I definitely had to do a lot of self-care to wade through. I think, the other one I'm paying close attention to are these three white men in Georgia who drove down and executed Ahmaud Arbery for jogging through the neighborhood. I mean, there's no other way to put it. They drove him down and executed him. And because they were buddies with the police system down there, no charges were even going to be considered against them until the black community stood up and said, hey, wait a minute. You know, his friends, family, and the community had to stand up in order to get charges brought. That one I'm paying real close attention to. That one has repercussions. I mean, in this Potter case, you know, on media, and I'm trying to remember what context it was, but I don't remember which channel I was watching, but they were talking about the videotape and they were, you know, talking about what they thought may be key components to this trial. And one of them that they always zero in on is when the video shows Potter saying taser, 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 and then shoots him with his gun. And then the reporter's comments also were saying, and the other thing that needs to be looked at is Dante Wright's actions in the car. And I'm thinking, what does that have? He's in the car. What does that have to do with anything? Right? I mean, and so, again, for me, that's where these divisions, where they were seeds of doubt are planted, and it's done so in the media.
Well, in the interesting piece for that, you know, as you mentioned that, why was he stopped in the first place and all these other questions?
Exactly.
This case has led to some developments across the country. City of Philadelphia has now banned low-level traffic stops. And the first city in the country to do that, and really start to ask the question and get at the issue of why why do we do some of the things that we do? Why do we lock up the folks that we do? Why is so much of our prison population locked up for nonviolent offenses that then put them into situations of being more likely to be in more dangerous categories later on because of the conditioning that our prisons do, regardless of your racial background? Like, these are important questions that this string of cases are starting to increase. I would also offer, Don, you brought up something very important, and that is the gall that folks had to chase down Ahmaud Arbery, assume and have their mental model and assumptions about black folks turn them into vigilante killers. The Rittenhouse case is being looked at by communities of color specifically for that reason. What implications are there if the outcome of this seems to okay this sense of vigilante bravado that recreates the police culture that we're trying to change in the first place? And of course the implications of the police officers who allowed him to be in the space. I mean, there's a lot of important things that are going to come out of the decisions that are made in these next couple of trials. You've been listening to Counter Stories. I'm Anthony Galloway with crew members Don Eubanks and Hlee Lee. Support for this show is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com.
Honestly, like, I just feel like one thing that's coming out of this Rittenhouse thing is just how messed up our judicial system is, that this judge can be so openly biased and still be presiding over this case. Like, it boggles my mind. I just feel like they're not even trying to hide their biases anymore, and just know that they have this position, they have this power, and they're just going to keep having it. I mean,
look at in the state of Georgia, what is the black population in Georgia? And the reason I'm bringing that up is when we think Georgia, we think black, we think Atlanta. You know, there's a movement of black folks back to Atlanta, and yet we're in Georgia, and they were able to put together a jury of what, 11 white folks and one black person?
Well, so, okay. So the question you have is, what is the population of Brunswick, Georgia?
Yeah.
That's the question. And Brunswick is a white neighborhood. Let's call it that. So, Hlee, you got some statistics about Georgia itself?
Yeah, so according to the 2020 census, Black or African American made up 32.6% of the Georgia population.
So in comparison to the country, that's huge. I mean, it's huge. We're talking about chocolate cities when we're talking about Atlanta, in certain cities in Alabama, but not all of the cities are, and Brunswick is not. Brunswick is a white town. And so we again have the makings and the setups for these conditions and context. I want to complicate
Honestly,
things.
I'm surprised that it's happening in Brunswick.
We're getting throughout all these trials, we're getting lessons in judiciary practices in different states and how they're different. You know, we had that conversation with the Chauvin trial about why things are here. When we had Will Snowden from the Jurors Project on the Bearing Witness podcast, they had Will Snowden of the Juror Project. And he talked about, you know, how complicated the history of juries are for folks of color. And that often we go by, voter rolls and other things that are tied to racial stratification when we already know all the data that we have. Because we know everybody in the county, and so we can that list could be much bigger than the one we actually use in certain places. But also, even in Kenosha, Wisconsin, you know, folks raised their eyebrow when Kyle Rittenhouse got to pick who deliberated as the jury by lottery, because that's a rule in Wisconsin. And we're like, why he's getting special treatment? Well, we have different judicatory rules. Not judicatory rules, but judiciary rules in different states. And those things matter. They can make a huge difference. And so there's a lot of learning that comes out of this as well. You've been listening to Counter Stories. I'm Anthony Galloway with crew members Don Eubanks and Hlee Lee. Support for this show is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. Speaking of learning, I'm going to force us to another space here, because since we're on the topic of learning, Prior Lake, many of folks have seen this. This has actually gotten to the national news space, where students in Prior Lake walk out after a group of white students, or I don't know if it's a group of white students, but some white students at that school made a video referring to a young woman using the N-word and telling her to go kill herself and do it better this time. And so we see this very public profile of something that unfortunately has been part and parcel to many of the experiences of people of color in our school systems. So what have you been talking about in your own circles around this? Because this isn't isolated, and that's one of the reasons why the kids walked out. This has been something that's been in the school district for a while, and students from other school districts came and rallied with the Prior Lake students because they've experienced similar behavior and bullying and things like that in their schools. So what has been the conversation in your circles?
There were other walkouts that had happened from other schools in relation to sexual harassment not being taken seriously in schools. I mean, there's a big issue.
That was the Central High School walkout.
Yeah, and Highland Park walked out as well over the sexual harassment issues. And we walked out when we were at Highland because we were told we couldn't wear spaghetti straps because they distracted male teachers. You know, and we said, okay, then put air conditioning in, right? Like, we won't wear spaghetti strap tank tops if you have air conditioning. Like, so.
Hey, wait. They really told you that?
They said that it was distracting, and several of the females believe it was attributed to the actions of a specific teacher.
Wow.
Who very much liked the younger girls, but had tenure. And so we all kind of was just like, we can't do anything about it. And there was no point to complain anymore, right? I mean, I've seen this even, you know, I was approached by community members who say, hey, can you help connect us to resources because our daughter was harassed or our son was harassed because of his race and the principals don't take it seriously. It, you know, this is one of those situations, though, with the Prior Lake where they have video of this. So how can something not be done?
They posted this young girl, and there was at least one or two other girls there with her. Good.
Right.
Have you seen the video? I mean, you know, I saw it. You know, Sean King posted it on his Facebook page. So whenever anything shocking in this country happens, he'll post it on his page. And I saw that video. And but I just kind of glanced at it real quick, and it was later in the day that they started reporting that this happened in Prior Lake, because I saw the video without kind of reading all the background, so it was I didn't know where it had happened, and until later that afternoon, then I heard that it was actually here in Prior Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you made the assumption that it was not here.
Well, I just didn't make any assumption. Oh, okay. I wasn't sure where it was at, other than here we go. It's kind of like that video of that white teacher in California with this headdress on her head, jumping around in the classroom, acting like, well, I don't know what she was acting like, an idiot, trying to imitate Native Americans. I mean, you know, it's like you can't believe this stuff when you see it at times. And so that was my reaction when I saw the video. And then when I learned that it actually happened here in Prior Lake, it's interesting how there was the protest, the students stood up, the young lady that this was directed to has been brave enough to come and talk about what it did to her personally. She even talked about some of the struggles she has had dealing with her mental health. I mean, I just praise this young woman. And when you look at her and you look at the behavior of these young white girls and what they were saying and how they were saying it, they were encouraging her to do a better job, to kill herself. Who does that?
But that goes on such an even larger level of our society at this point, right? People giving death threats, like, it's nothing. People are telling people to go kill themselves. Like, it's not a big deal, right? I mean, the GOP senators who voted for the infrastructure bill, Jake Gyllenhaal, I mean, come on. Like, everybody's just, like, people just threaten death so easily these days. It is a reflection of our society.
But has there been any repercussions against these young students from Prior Lake yet? Or are they still giving us the standard... While we're investigating.
I mean, that's the thing that they always said is, you know, especially the times that I've gone to school boards or principals about situations that have happened within their school that they don't address. It has always been a he said, she said type of situation. But when we have legit video and nothing is being done in a timely manner, I don't know what they can expect. Like, we're just going to be like, oh, okay, the end, bye. No. I don't know what the officials are expecting at this point when the evidence is right in front of you.
And this, again, comes to some of the imbalance. And this is the pattern I want to come on. For the same behaviors, there are different outcomes racially. And that is the issue. It is not – people keep trying to make this about – you know, about who's doing what and not looking at the fact that for the same behaviors, we have disparity. That's what people are talking to. It's not political. It's not all these other things. It is people calling out the inequity. And we seem to be unwilling to address that.
Well, but I know when you say we, you don't mean us, people of color. You mean folks in the dominant culture who seem unwilling or I would beg to differ, Anthony, and say that their inaction is the action, not to change the dynamic. And that is what is so traumatic, and that is what is so frustrating, because we see this play out and play out again. We can talk about different state rules, judicial rules when it comes to cases, you know, but we're talking about the dynamic of white men killing others, and it's being treated, you know, in a manner where we have to sit back and actually think that these they could get off, you know, and that and so I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like for a whole year we had this racial reckoning in the United States, throughout the world, as a result of George Floyd's murder. And now it's like we're right back to business as usual. We're right back into the same patterns where, you know, there's been this failed attempt at in Minneapolis to reconstruct the Minneapolis Police Department. You know, we'll have to wait to see how that eventually plays out. But it's been a year and a half since all that. And we're no closer to eliminating systemic racism than we were when George Floyd first got murdered.
Now, a person could look at that, especially a person who fits the description of those who don't want to make real, or not real, that's the wrong word, who don't want to make extreme changes or drastic changes, right? There were incremental things that came out. We do have some small pieces of legislation, changing of police rules. And one of the challenges and frustrations that we have as folks of color and communities of color, and that I have myself, let me keep it personal, local, and immediate, is that we seem unwilling to stop and say, how do we create something new? Now, what you referenced in the Minneapolis decision, the vote in this recent election cycle to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department and create an Office of Public Safety instead, I was dubious of that, absolutely, all the way through, and was not in support, largely because I'm fine with the reconstruction and doing something brand new. I'm not fine with the idea of something new that has no meat or plan or bells and whistles into it. When folks in community have been talking about what that should look like for a long time, and we completely bypass all the stuff they've talked about and built and suggested and recommended and said, we're going to build something new, and here's no specifics with it. That's the concern. Yeah.
My comment was wrapped around the entire episode that happened. Mm-hmm. I wasn't talking specifically about the proposal to change the public safety. Mm-hmm. I was talking about the entire effort to reform and how, and then eventually that's what it whittled down to.
I'm in full agreement. I guess the point that adds to the frustration to me is that, plus turning around and the first thing somebody says to you is, well, we did this little thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yo, that's the part that frustrates me.
Well, let's see. We changed Aunt Jemima's name. We got Washington instead of Washington Redskins. Let's see, they removed the native person off Llano Lakes Butter. Mm-hmm. You know, we got all those kind of things.
And then we had to worry about taking down the Statue of Columbus on our own
campus. Exactly. I mean, you know, so, and we're still having that debate, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and so, but in terms of actual action, in terms of making some systemic changes, that is where we're slowing down. We're going backwards. I mean, you know, as we've talked about in this climate, right? In this current climate, we have, you know, and I have to look to see, it'd be interesting if we could break down in Minnesota with the past election we just had, how many candidates on school boards who ran on the anti critical race theory actually got elected to those school boards? You know, I haven't seen any breakdown of that. Have you?
Another reason why voting is so important. And, you know, at least here in St. Paul, this last election was the school board. And so it was not, you know, it was an off year or not, mm-hmm. you know, the presidential election, you know, when everybody wants to vote. And so turnout is a lot lower on the off years.
A lot lower in comparison to the general election, but it was a lot higher for an off year, which is an interesting piece. Mm-hmm. But Lee, there's an interesting thing that you just made me think about, right? We had history and we just glossed right over it. In St. Paul, we had history. The first Eritrean elected official was elected to the school board in St. Paul. With the election of Hala Henderson, Georgia Fort and I were at Mayor Carter's watch party results, and there was this whoop that went out, and we realized we're sitting in there, and I was like, oh, snap, that's history that just happened. But it's not big in the news and not big in the story outside of the social media circles there. So again, all the things that we've just talked about, the frustrations, the incremental pieces, the we're not moving the needle, we lose sight of the fact that these kids who walked out in Prior Lake, they're not just walking out for this immediate incident. The students are starting to get fed up with what we are doing as adults in particular across the nation, and especially the fact that we're having this debate about critical race theory, which isn't really about critical race theory because nobody's, you know, in opposition to it actually has a real definition of it. Mm-hmm. But it is real that North Dakota... a school district in North Dakota passed and has in their rules and policies that you cannot teach critical race theory. And they have a definition that specifically says that you can't teach anything that presents racism as a systemic piece of our society beyond individual biases.
Wow.
So you have to present racism as something that's about individual biases and not systems.
And not systems.
So this is huge. And so this was part of the chance that students were having. And you made an important point in a previous podcast episode, Don, that we're not seeing people err in these meetings in support of teaching full and real histories. There's always a lot to talk about. And you can always count on us here at Counter Stories to start leaning into those conversations. I'm Anthony Galloway, pastor of St. Mark AME Church and partner at Dendros Group.
Don Eubanks, associate of Dendros Group and member of the Mille Lacs panel with Ojibwe Indians.
And I'm Holly Lee, owner of the Other Media Group and Counter Stories producer.
And we want to wish Luz to get well soon so you can get back in here, because I know she would have had a lot to say. Thank you so much. This is Counter Stories. This program is a co-production of the Counter Stories crew, the Other Media Group, and AMPERS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.